Chapter 28, Trains and Lockers. News of the bomb threat doesn't make anything easier at home. My mother sees it as another excuse to put me in a private school. My father, naturally, is opposed. He uses logic to make his point.
Do you know how much those places cost?
Yes, but his school is receiving bomb threats. How can he learn properly in such an environment?
There was no bomb.
My mother starts shaking, but she doesn't give up.
The Catholic school isn't that expensive.
We aren't Catholic.
You don't have to be Catholic, and they have a very good program.
What did I just say?
And so on. Of course, my father has logic on his side, and he can yell louder. So I'm pretty sure I'm not going to Catholic school anytime soon. That night, I dream of fires and explosions and student bodies moving in great masses from one building to another and bumping into Melissa Haverman. I bump her again and again, but she won't look at me. And then Andy is there, floating like a ghost, laughing at me. I wake up. The room is dark. My clock reads 3:17, the same number as my room at the hospital. 17 everywhere. I'm 17. 17 is the seventh prime number. I sit up in bed and listen. All is silent. I go to the window and open it. Andy's window is shut. The blinds are closed. I call out his name once, but I know he won't hear me. After a time, I return to bed and close my eyes and imagine a train passing. The engine has long passed. The end of the train is nowhere in sight. I count the cars. Boxcar, container car, pressure aid freight car, tank car, tank car, tank car, conveyor, boxcar, boxcar, passenger car, 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 passenger car. In the morning, everybody at school is talking about the bomb threat. I weave through the crowded halls, everyone ignoring me. I stop at my locker and spin the combination lock. Something is wrong. The lock feels wrong. It turns too easily, without the usual faint clicking. I pull up on the handle and the door swings open, and I stare at the contents. Someone's been in my locker. I sort through my stuff to see what's missing. My books are there, and my extra sweatshirt, and my file folders full of old papers. Someone's hand comes down on my shoulder, and I jump.
Easy, Douglas.
It's Principal Jansen.
Someone broke into my locker, I say.
It's okay, Douglas. We need you down at the office. His hand is still gripping my shoulder.
Somebody was in my locker.
Kids are stopping in the hall, staring at us. I guess I was yelling.
Come along, says Principal Jansen, pulling me away from the locker.
My stuff!
No one will bother your stuff.
He shifts his grip to my upper arm. I see flashes of faces as he moves me quickly down the hall. I try to keep up, but my feet barely touch the floor. Everyone we pass is looking at us. Looking at me.